Welcome everyone to our 10th coaching session. It's the 10th week of the Author of Change Transformational Coaching Program, which means we're winding down. This is the third to last session. And so I've been trying to encourage everyone to show up so that I could help you as much as possible here, in the last week. So I hope you've come with your questions. We just have Sherry and Ella here right now. I'm hoping we have some other people join, but it doesn't matter. We'll answer questions and see how it goes. So I'm going to turn it over to all of you. You've gotten your 10th week homework. You've been through, I can't remember how many videos, how many webinar videos, but should have been 2, 4, 5 of them, right? By now?
I believe so. Actually, I just do them. I haven't counted. So.
Yeah, well, there were two the first month, two the second month, and one so far. So yeah, 5 webinars, 10 homework assignments at this point. Ah, somebody else has joined us. Who's here?
Deborah.
Hi, Deborah.
And my Zoom is not working again. Okie dokie.
The Zoom, is it?
Okay.
You mean your video?
No, the Zoom itself.
Well, I hear you.
The link. Yeah, I'm on the phone. I'm on the phone, the dial-in number.
Oh, okay. You can get it to work on your computer?
Excuse me, what did you say?
You couldn't get it to work on your computer?
No.
All
okay,
right.
Well, that's all right.
Yeah, I'm not sure why, because I see Sherry's on her computer. I think Ella's on her phone. But anyway, doesn't matter. So I was just saying, it's, we've done 5 webinars, and we're on to the 10th homework assignment. So, we're winding down and gearing up at the same time, right? Winding down the course and gearing up for your book. So anyway, I'm going to open up to all of you to ask me whatever questions you have or tell me how I can support you. Who's got something for me? Or how are y'all feeling? Let's just check in. How are y'all feeling about where you are and what's going on? And are you feeling like you're keeping up, falling behind? Are you feeling encouraged, discouraged? What's going on with all of you?
Well, for me, it's like, it's a little bit confusing. It's not confusing. I've already started my book. I'm about 2/3 done with it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the first writing of it. And, so I've already planned the book. I've already done the things that were in this lesson. But I learned a lot from this lesson because the question, what 3 things would help your book motivate readers to action? I hadn't thought about that before.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really helpful for focusing on what I want to write. I mean, even though it's a fiction book because I wanted to write a nonfiction book, but I didn't want to be preachy. So I decided I would do it through fictional characters. And so in spite of the fact it's a fiction book, the things that you're teaching us about nonfiction are helping me think more deeply about it, about how I want this to progress, I guess is what I want to say. I've already done the outlining, I've used the snowflake method for fiction writers, but anyway, this has been really helpful. That question was really helpful to help me focus on, where I'm going with this book. Because I'm stuck right now and I feel like I'm rambling and, I needed this to center me back and draw something important out of this book instead of just a bunch of fictional characters doing stuff. So.
Right. Yeah. So everything that's included you know, from here on is not just for nonfiction, it's also for fiction. And I would just say, even though you're already writing and you've already planned out your book, just take all of it into consideration and kind of make a list of the things that you want to look at when you review your book, you know, when you go back and revise. The other thing is to look at what you've already done and how you planned out your book and ask yourself, you know, what that you're learning now can be applied so that you make the book better, right? You said you're how far, a third or two-thirds?
Two-thirds, yeah, probably.
Two-thirds through. So, you know, if you see something that really you feel needs changing, then if it were me, I would just be going back and revising as that first two-thirds so that, you know, then when you get to the last third, you're in a better place.
It's, or, yeah.
Or you can just write till the end and then say, okay, here's my list of things. And as I revise, this is what I need to look for. Right?
Yeah, I agree. The thing that helped me is that I was just stuck. It's like, where am I going with this? Why? How can I move this forward? And this has just been very helpful this week for me.
Good. Yeah. So, you know, sometimes we, when we're stuck, we need to just go back and, you know, look at our plan and see how it's working. See if it needs to be revised. And that goes for a novel as much as anything else. All right, good. Well, I'm glad it was helpful.
Very.
Awesome. Deborah, are you here twice or did we gain somebody?
I got on the computer finally, but I'm on the phone.
Oh, okay.
So, yes, I'm
you're here twice. That's okay. Sometimes Ella's here twice too. We don't mind.
What I like is the flexibility with the table of contents and the chapter summaries. I've already changed mine once, and the more we learn, the more fine tuning I can do on the layout of my book, and I appreciate that.
Awesome. Great. Super. Thanks for checking in. Ella, you want to just check in and say what you're going through and where you are with things?
Yes. This week, the focus was on the table of contents and the chapter summary. And I also feeling an urgency because a very competitive book showed up on the bestseller bookshelf last week. I went ahead and wrote my query letter this week, which is just a condensed book proposal that has the subject hook, the book hook, the benefits, a short author bio, and the markets all in there on one page. So my question today, my main question is about the query letter. Mm-hmm. Although it ties into the homework.
Okay. Well, so why don't you go ahead and ask it and we'll get started. And then I actually have an email from Melinda where she asked a question too.
Okay. The main question about the query letter is, first of all, I'm really grateful for your university because I was able to go into the archives and pull about 4 blogs up about query letters. So I studied those intensely before I began to write it. Mm-hmm. That helped. But then, one of the blogs was very helpful. It gave 4 sources to find your agent. And I went to agentquery.com today, and I typed in the 2 main words, like spirituality, nature. And I got about, I think, 1,000 agents came up.
Wow.
Something extreme. 961.
Wow.
So I'm going to go ahead and get a monthly membership to Marketplace, which your blog recommends, and that's where you can get detailed information. But now I'm at this place where I spent about 5 hours and I'm overwhelmed. I know like 7 books that are my high competitive books. I would just like to know who are the agents of those 7 books, and I want to query those persons because they're already very focused on my subject matter. Mm-hmm. So my question is it possible to do it the reverse way? Rather than sorting through 1,000 agents and narrowing it down, can I just go to how do I find out the agents for a specific book?
Okay, good question. So first of all, I want to clarify something. You said you went into the Nonfiction Writers University and you found resources there. Were those actually like assignments or something? Because you called them blog posts. So I'm wondering whether you went to Write Nonfiction Now or whether you were in the university, just so other people know where to look.
Yeah, that's correct. They were in Nonfiction Now.
Okay, so they were actual blog posts on the blog Write Nonfiction Now.
Yes.
Okay, awesome. Okay, yeah, because we've written a lot about query letters there. Okay, so you want to look at the acknowledgments in most books. I was going to see if I had a book here handy, most books, if you look at the acknowledgments, will have the agent mentioned. So that's where I go to look for agents.
Okay.
So, for instance, if I were to go to, let's see. Whoops. Okay, so in Brendan Burchard's book, High Performance Habits, I think it's at the back. Yeah, so he has it, I don't know why, but he has his at the back of his book, and it's quite long. And there, somewhere. He mentions his editor, right here. It says, Scott Hoffman, my agent. So that's right here in the acknowledgments. Okay. So I'm not saying you're
okay. Agent.
I'm just saying, just trying to show you that it's there. Most acknowledgments tend to be near the front of the book, but okay. These are at the back also. So this is, The Big Leap by Gay Hendrickson. Very grateful to have a literary agent, Bonnie Solo, who is more than just a professional asset to my life. So that's where you want to look. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yes, and this book that just hit the bestseller list called Forest Bathing, it's a little odd. It actually does not state the agent in the acknowledgments. It's a very simple book. Could I actually contact Penguin directly? Penguin Random House and ask them?
I would contact the author.
Oh, okay.
Penguin House is not going to respond to you on a question like that.
Okay.
It's called Forest Bathing, like B-A-T-I-N-G.
Bathing, B-A-T-H-I-N-G.
Got it. Okay.
But it's an odd book. It's based out of Japan, but.
Well, being that it's based out of Japan could be, different in general. So I would say, here's one thing you can do, because sometimes it's published in like Writer's Market or not. Yeah, Writer's Market. So if you put in, let's see, literary agent, Forest Bathing. Hold on. So a couple things come up. I mean, some of them are missing the word agent in them. If it were me, I'd probably just contact him. But I did do a Google search, and some things come up. I'm just not, for some reason, that's not working very well. It's
okay.
But anyway, you could try that. But the other books might have their agents listed.
Okay. So basically, this is an, I don't know, amorphous process. It's like there's no easy way. You just have to figure things out with each book.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
But hold on. So here's something. So see, I just Googled. So yes, you do have to figure it out, but it actually came up. Alan O'Shea, literary agency. It says in the news, The Joys of Forest Bathing just sold the first edition in Spain. So the likelihood is that Alan O'Shea literary agents is actually representing this book.
Wow. And all you did was Google Forest Bathing literary agent.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And let's see. So now I just went to their new and noteworthy to new deals. What was it called? It's not just forest bathing. There's more to it. What was it?
There's How Trees Can Help You Find Health and Happiness.
No. The name of that book had more to it than just forest bathing.
The Japanese Art and Science of Shinrin Yoku?
No.
No.
Hang on. Oh, I guess it is just forest bathing. Okay. You know, there's another one called Your Guide to Forest Bathing. Anyway, I'm just trying to see whether it's on their site. Not actually seeing it. But that would be a start. And here's the thing. You could contact that agency and just say, did you represent this book?
Okay.
Because I'm for some reason, I'm not seeing a client news. Let's see. Yeah, I mean, I'm just kind of perusing their site.
Okay.
Yeah. I would just go to their site and look around and see if you can find it there. And if you can't, then I would contact them and say, you know, I saw this notice and can you, you know, do you represent this book? I mean, it'd be better if you could just find out. I'm just not seeing it offhand, although I did see that come from that announcement come from their site.
I have one final related question.
Yep.
Would an agent like to represent a competitive book? Or would they be betraying their author that they are already representing?
It depends. If they feel the book is different enough, then they might be willing to. So I would at least query them, and if they say they're not interested because it's too close to the other book, then you just say, you can actually respond and say, could you recommend somebody else?
Okay. And is there any, this is a question that's maybe not so great, but are they under any obligation to not share your query letter with your competitor, or is it open field? Once you send it to them, anybody, they can share it with anybody.
Oh, no, they won't share it.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, and plus, you know, even if they shared it, nobody can write the book you're going to write.
Correct.
So, you know, I always say that it just, it's not, I just don't think that anybody can write the same book.
No.
But yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of stuff out there on him and his book. I would just keep searching around, but I would definitely search deeper in that agency. Okay?
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Sorry, there's no easier way.
Okay, that's all right.
All right, so let me go back to my email and answer this question from Malin.
May I ask Ella a question real quick?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Ella, you said something about a reference to Marketplace that you found. Is that the correct
name? Yes.
And is it marketplace.com or what?
It'll take me 1 minute to pull it up on my computer, but I got it from Nina's. I just went into all of Nina's articles on query letters, and one of them had listed at least 4 places to search. And when I went online, the marketplace was the one that requires a $25 a month membership fee, but it looked very in-depth. Let me just try to find it.
Okay.
But Nina knows.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, maybe, Ella, what you could do is the articles, the blog posts you read, if you still have the URLs handy, you could share them on the Facebook page.
Ah, yes, I will do that. In fact, I've got a file here where I put all of your articles together, and I'm just going to pull it up right now. Here it is. It's the Publisher's Marketplace, it's called. Publisher's Marketplace, and I will put on the Facebook. And I've also got the name of the blog right here coming up.
Yeah, so Publisher's Marketplace is, they publish, I believe, all the deals that are going down and all that stuff. But publishers buy a much more expensive subscription, and that's how they end up knowing like how many books sold, you know, like the actual data behind book sales. Does that make sense?
Yes, I found the 4 that are listed in that article. They were Publishers Marketplace, number 1, number 2, The Guide to Literary Agents, number 3, Writer's Market, number 4, Jeff Herman's Guide to Book Publishers, Editors, and Literary Agents, and 5 was the Association of Authors Representatives site for agentquery.com. And I also went to agentquery.com, and that's how I found the 1,000 agents in my area.
So is that the site where you can actually put a query up there on the actual site?
Yes, it suggested you could do that, but it sounded a little scary.
Now, a lot of people do that, and they find agents there. The agents actually are trolling around there looking for good, you know, good ideas.
Wow.
So, you know, I don't know that I know anyone specifically who found an agent there, but that's what that site is set up to do. So, you know, you could always try querying first, and then if you have trouble, go there and look around there. You know, or post there.
Yeah, I'm going to take the top ones that I found from the agentquery.com, and then I'm going to pay my $25 and plug it into Publisher's Marketplace to get more detail on those specific agents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think Writer's Market does the same. You can have an online version of Writer's Market, the book, and you can research agents there. They just don't have all the agents. I don't know that any of the sites have all the agents or books. And yeah, Jeff Herman's book is good, and the one from Writer's Digest is good. But you can also just Google and find people. So there are lots of ways. Okay?
Thank you.
Yep. Deborah, you good with that?
I'm good with that. Thank you.
All right. So here's a little update from Melinda. She says, due to 2 shift work commitments, she's missing sessions. But she's catching up as much as possible. Misses being in the group. She says she's created the book tree with branches and leaves, created a mind map. She thought was easier. She's written book summaries for 7 chapters, and she keeps thinking her book's going to be small in the nonfiction productivity and self-help category. So she wants me to share my views on the recommended length of a nonfiction book. She says she's writing on productivity tips for overwhelmed and overworked women. The key objective and a benefit are to give actionable tips to my readers on how they can optimally use their finite energy and focus on getting things done that matter the most to them in every season of their lives. So she says, I intend to keep the book a bit shorter than my book competitors. I want to follow my book's role models, but yet do not want to do something totally different to surprise my readers. My target market is women between the age of 20 to 35 and between 40 to 50 years of age, working outside and inside the home, with or without kids. So the question is, to get an idea of the ideal length of the book, which is more like a workbook, but not let my readers feel that they have to complete the entire workbook before they see benefits that I promise in my book overview. Okay, so for Melinda, the average nonfiction book is about 50,000 words. And the reason for that is because if you pick up a book that's sort of the average size, you know, for it to take up space on the bookshelf and be easily seen with a, you know, with a spine, right, it has to be about 50,000 words. Now, this book is quite a bit smaller than that book, right? I mean, all the way around. It's a smaller book. I don't know if you can see that. I keep moving it. But it's a smaller book. It's smaller than this self-published book as well, by a little bit. So what probably happened was this book was a shorter book. And so what they did was they made it a smaller book. I did the same thing. I have a 72-page book. It's tiny. And I made it tiny. It actually was supposed to be kind of a pocket guide you could carry with you. And so it worked out fine that way. But Amazon wouldn't print on the spine because it was too small. And from a publisher's perspective, if it's not big enough to be seen on the shelf, then it's kind of wasted real estate because nobody's going to find it. Nobody's going to see it. So you want a book that's at least 100 pages long printed so that it can have a spine. And you can adjust, if you're self-publishing, you can adjust the size. You know, if you look at, I mean, if you're doing a workbook, you know, if you look at Creative Visualization for Writers, for instance, it's quite large size. It's not super thick, but it's not thin either. So I can't, hold on, let me get it, see how many pages it is. I mean, so compared to this one, it's, you know, it's big. And they made it workbook sized. And it only has, well, it has 209 or 210 pages. You know, this one, the small one, has over 200 pages still. So that's usually what publishers are going for, somewhere around 200 pages or more, so that it's sizable enough to be seen on the, you know, on the bookshelf. Now, this one is thin, right? So it's not going to take up as much real estate. That means it's not as easily found. So that's an issue. So I would say that you want to, you know, if you're going to go the traditional publishing route, you want to make an argument for, you know, why your book is shorter and say that you see it being published in a certain size so that it'll actually be over 100 pages. If it's, but most publishers are looking for 50,000 words or more. So, you know, 50 to 70,000 words, I would say. If you're going to self-publish, you can do whatever the heck you want. But I would still say you better have a book that's at least, you know, over 100 pages so that it's, the spine can be printed on. You want people to put it on their bookshelves and be able to find it, right? So if you self-publish, it's probably not going to be in a bookstore, but I don't have a copy of my little book, but you know, if it's a book that's, I'm looking at my bookshelves to look for thin books. But the thinner they are, the harder they are to see. Basically, oh, here's one, hold on. So this book was self-published, and it is 138 pages. But look how, can you see how small that is? Do y'all see that?
Mm-hmm.
Compared to even mine, which is still thin, but see, way easier to read, right? And to see on a bookshelf. You know, when you compare it to, you know, a book like this, again, big difference.
Yep.
So, however you choose to publish, you're going to have to, you know, have enough pages to make it visible on the bookshelf. And, you know, that's really the big thing. If you're going to self-publish and you don't care so much about the bookshelf, then I guess you can do whatever you want. I would suggest that you have enough content in it that it's not just a workbook, because workbooks don't sell so well. Creative visualization for writers still had a lot of content in it, you know, besides the pages to write on and draw on. And plus it took off after the, you know, the adult coloring book craze. So it was a little different, but those are some things to think about. So I hope that helps, Melinda. Okay. Sherry, Deborah, Ella, more questions? No more questions?
Well, let me look at my homework again.
Your time for questions.
I don't think I have.
Yeah, related to anything.
Well, okay. You told me to check the market, or you told us all to check the market. And so I went into Inspirational women's inspirational book on self-discovery, and almost all of them were nonfiction. In fact, I don't know that, and there was one that was a memoir. Well, that's nonfiction. So what would be a good thing for me to use to check my market?
Okay, so first of all, the market is not the other books. That's the competition.
Okay.
So if you're looking for the market, what you're going to do, and here, why don't I share my screen and I'll kind of show you. All right, can you all see my screen?
Yep.
All right, so we have inspirational, well, what I would go for, so what you want to know is who's going to read the book. So how would you describe the person who's going to read your book?
I would say it's probably going to be a woman between 40 and 70 who has either just lost her husband through widowhood or divorce or just betrayal.
Okay. So we're just going to put in, so I'm going to say women aged 40 to 70 in the U.S. And probably what's going to come up are some census figures, which is always a good place to start when you're looking at your market. Also, the Pew research. Okay, here's something. So I would just be doing research like this. I'd just be Googling different things.
Mm-hmm.
This says, excuse me, this is talking about 1998. So we want something more current than that.
I know it's hard to believe that's 20 years ago.
Yeah. All right, so let's do this. How many women? So can you see that I've clarified it? How many women aged 40 to 70 widowed or divorced in the U.S. in 2017? Now, maybe that you have to split up widowed or divorced. Uh-huh. So I'm going to this one at a statistic. And now you at least get a chart,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
2017 by sex. So you can see, now you can look by millions, how many? How many divorced? Mm-hmm. How many widowed? But you want women. So we want mm-hmm. that one and that one, right? So you can see you're getting some statistics now. That's going to be your market. You're going to be able to say there are, you know, 14.6 million divorced women in the United States, and there are 11.64 widowed women in the United States. So that mm-hmm. is, that's a market. Okay. Does that make sense?
Yep.
You know, and here are some divorce rates and whatever. But that's how you're going to research. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that's your market. You want to know size by numbers. But if you can't find, for any of you who are struggling with that, you know, I'll often go to magazines and look, you know, that are that target my same audience. And I'll find out how many subscribers they have. Or I'll go to organizations and find out how many, you know, members are in the organizations, if the organization is related to my target audience. Facebook groups, meetups,
mm-hmm.
you know. So those are all ways for you to see how large your market is.
Okay.
That make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Okay. Awesome. Deborah, do you have a question?
Sorry, I had to unmute. No, I don't.
Okay.
Just a lot to work through.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Ella, do you have questions?
I could have one in just a few minutes.
Okay.
Okay.
Sounds like you're driving or something.
Yes, I apologize. I had to get somewhere. Yes.
Okay.
I can pull over in the next intersection.
Okay. All right. Sherry, you have any others in the meantime?
No, I don't.
So are all of you just so overwhelmed, or just everything was explained so well? You're all doing great, which would be awesome.
You're awesome.
Thank you. Anything from the past that we've covered that you're still stuck on? Doesn't have to be the current stuff. It could be something in the past.
I need to change my pitch now.
Okay, so let's talk about that. Why?
Because now that I've gotten, that I've dug so much deeper, and I realize that really the role for my book is advocacy. Mm-hmm. I'm an advocate for the respectful care of the elderly. Mm-hmm. So my pitch has to have that punch.
Yep.
Can't just be my memoir. It's got to be that punch.
So that's not uncommon. And what I usually have people, so if you've read the author training manual, and even if you haven't, the way I set it up is that you write your pitch pretty early, and you start on the overview for your book. So you write a pitch, and you write the benefits, and maybe a couple paragraphs about your book. And that begins to be your overview for the book. And then you do the market research, like we were talking about with Sherry, and you do the competitive analysis, look at the other books. So you decide how big your market is, and maybe you narrow your market, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe your market's really broad and you begin to narrow it down a little bit. And then you do the competitive analysis and you look at the other books. And when you're looking at the other books, you know, you see what's good about them, what's bad about them, and you start to, you know, gestate some new ideas about your book, how it, you can make it better. And at that point, writers often go back to the beginning, to the pitch, and say, okay, I already know I need to change my pitch because my book is changing. Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing because you're making it better. See, the problem that I've always seen is that most people get an idea for a book and they just start writing. And they don't know if it's a good book. They don't know if it's a marketable book or whether it's necessary in the category or whether it's needed by their readership. They just think they know. Mm-hmm. The more of this work you do, the more you hone your idea to make it more marketable. And so going back and rewriting the pitch at that point is you know, often the case. What happens? Also, then you write your chapter summaries, and that's what really fleshes out your book. You know, you have a you have your table of contents or list of chapters, and then you do the chapter summaries, and then you start looking, does it all sync up? You know, does all my content actually sync up with the table of contents? And not only does all of that, the table of contents and the chapter summaries, the content, does that sync up with the book I said I was going to write?
Right, and that's what I've been thinking about is my piece on fighting for mom. I'm thinking about moving that to the get-go. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's a powerful statement, and it's a powerful way to start the book.
It is. Now, did you hook up with Pam Norton by any chance?
No. No, I emailed them by the reply all, and I haven't heard anything at all.
Okay, well, Pam's been pretty tied up with her mom. But Pam is always talking about how she pulled a Thelma and Louise with her mom.
Oh, really?
Yeah, her mom was, her family put her in she has Alzheimer's or dementia, and she got put in a home, and she was floundering there, not doing well at all. And Pam talked to her mom, and her mom didn't want to be there, and Pam didn't think it was good for her, and she hauled her on out of there.
That's great.
Yeah, and she's been doing great, but her family had a real issue with it. So, you know, Pam, right, respond to the email again, okay? Because Pam just has her hands full. She's also working with some kind of an association now. She's hooked herself up with another group. And anyway, but she, you know, that's exactly what she's talking about, that you have to be the advocate for your parents. You have to fight for them. And so I think that's awesome for you to put that at the beginning of the book.
Yeah, yeah. If mom wasn't bedridden, I would love to pull a Thelma and Louise with her. Oh, you know, and I just wonder if we hadn't experienced in the last three, if she had died or passed away before the last 3 months, there wouldn't be the impact of the elder care abuse and neglect that we've gone through. We had to move her someplace else, and honestly, it's just, but that gives strength to the book. But
so there's someone else I might be able to put you in touch with, and that is my girlfriend. She's one of my oldest friends, Karen. She and her three sisters, their parents were in like an assisted living, but they were living in an apartment or a house of their own.
Okay.
And then the father had a stroke, and then the mother fell, and so they ended up, you know, in the real assisted living area. Mm-hmm. And of course, they have caregivers, but they hired their own caregivers in addition, because mm-hmm. now the two parents are there together. And I don't know whether it's an apartment or what, but you know, they're there together. Mm-hmm. And the sisters don't feel like it's enough care. And not only that, they don't ever leave the parents alone, ever.
The sisters don't?
Yeah, none of them live in Florida where the parents are, and the sisters fly there, all four of them, one at a time, to be there. And like one will leave, you know, they leave and go at the same time so that somebody's always on the ground there.
Right.
So and they're like calling us. They're calling at night to check that the caregivers are not asleep. You know, a lot of times they just stay there all night.
Yeah.
So
well, this is my another husband one of those and situations. I alternate. We're there every day.
Yeah.
And at least, you know, we know that she's fed midday. She at least has one meal, good meal a day. Yeah. But
yeah, so I get it because that's exactly,
deplorable situation. Deplorable.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, how they feel too. They feel like they need to be on the ground. They can't miss one of the appointments with the, you know, the caregivers because then somebody will make a decision about the care plan without them.
Right, right.
You want to make sure that if the food shows up and it's not something their parents will eat or it's not appropriate for them to eat, that they can go get them.
Gag on, yeah.
Yeah, so no, I totally get it. So you know, that's why your book is enormously necessary. But to start it in that way and say, you know, you really need to fight for your parents, I think that's definitely the way to go.
Yeah, that's good. Thank you.
Yeah, so and contact Terry, Pam in particular. Terry has her dad living at home with her also.
You know, I just figured, you know, they're just awfully busy.
Yeah, well, they are.
And they probably thought, oh, no, well, how have I got time to deal with this lady?
No, I asked them both if they'd be willing, and they said yes. So just respond again. And if you want to talk to my friend Karen, I can put you in touch with her as well.
Okay, that'd be great.
Okay. Yeah.
And, all right, so Sherry, that was what I was thinking about. I was thinking about how in fiction, you start with the action. And so I just applied it to this memoir. I need to start with the power, start with the action.
Very good. Okay, so yeah, so it's good to redo your pitch. It's, you know, basically you're just looking at it and saying, okay, how can I make things better, which is great. And how much of the book do you already have done?
Maybe 10%. I mean, It's at a perfect spot for moving around.
Good.
And fine tuning.
Right. So this process should help you with that.
Right.
I mean, it already seems like it is, but I think the more you get into, I guess it's week 9 and 10 really, but it's on, you know, I'm trying to remember. I don't have the homework right in front of me, but, the ones about writing the book and doing this whole business plan.
Right.
That's basically just what I explained in the author training manual, but I just have applied it here because it's almost more necessary for authoring a book about change because you really have to make it marketable. It's not enough to just say, I think this change should happen, right?
Yeah.
You have to make the book marketable enough that it actually gets in people's hands because if it doesn't sell, you have no impact.
Right. And you have to catch them right away.
That's right.
They got to open the book and be caught.
Right. So that's why the business plan is enormously important for a novel, for nonfiction, for memoir, all of it.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. All right, let's see if Ella's back and has a question. Ella, are you parked?
Yes, I'm parked. Okay. My question goes back to the query letter today. Would it be totally wrong to just... I know I have a large publisher that I've wanted to address for 30 years. If I just found the name of the publisher who does a certain imprint, could I just send it directly to them without an agent, or is that a complete no-no? Should I just be patient and get an agent first?
It's a no-no.
It's a no-no. Okay.
Well, how big is the publisher? What publisher are we talking about?
Oh, it's the branch of Simon & Schuster.
No. You have to have an agent.
Huge.
They won't even look at you. It'll be in the trash and you'll never hear from them.
Okay. And it could possibly hurt my chances later if I show up in a different guise.
Yes. You need an agent. For the big publishing houses, you have to have an agent. And the mid-sized houses, you have to have an agent. Writer's Digest is considered mid-sized, although I always think of them as fairly small, but you know, they have, I have a friend who she's represented herself to them, but again, they are kind of this niche little publisher, right? I mean, they call themselves mid-sized, but if it's not a small publisher, I wouldn't be doing that. I would be, you know, the small publishing houses are often very happy to take what we call unagented work, but I would always do your research. And you can go to any publishing house and find out from their site whether they require an agent. But most... Yeah, but the mid-sized and large, there's no way that you're going to get in there without an agent. They don't have the time.
Okay.
They don't have the time to look at the proposals. They trust the agents to do that work for them, to only bring them reliable, you know, I mean, writers that are worth looking at and ideas worth looking at.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Other questions, Lee? Go ahead, Ella.
I have one more question. Uh-huh. What happens if an agent says they do not accept unsolicited queries? What does an agent only accept?
That's rare.
Oh, okay.
I mean, the only other way agents are going to get queries in is by going to conferences, and not all of them do that. They may be getting recommendations, but I don't think I've ever heard of an agent. I mean, I could be totally wrong, but I don't think I've ever heard of an agent who doesn't take unsolicited query letters.
Okay. One last question.
Uh-huh.
Could I contact one of my old mentors who knew me for 20 years and say, who is your agent? Would you put in a word for me? Could I do that?
Yes, you could, for sure.
Okay.
Because then you can also say in your query letter, my mentor so-and-so recommended I contact you.
Okay. That'll be one of my first things I do tomorrow then. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah. Anytime you find a personal connection to an agent, all the better.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
One last question related to that. Would it be insulting to my mentor to say, if I'm accepted or get a contract with this publishing company, would you consider if I paid you writing the foreword?
Wouldn't be insulting, but I wouldn't offer to pay.
Okay.
I mean, that's like the last resort is to pay. And it isn't that some people don't ask for pay. I think my last foreword, was it this one? Sorry, trying to remember who wrote my foreword. Oh, right, Dinty Moore. It was either Dinty Moore or James Scott Bell. Both of them had relationships with Writer's Digest. And from one of the books, I was really, I think it was actually Creative Visualization for Writers, but I can't remember. Anyway, I was really struggling to get a foreword. And in the end, Writer's Digest struck a deal with one of those two people. And I think they might've paid them something on my behalf, but that's not typical, you know, for the publisher to do that for you. But I mean, there are times when you have to pay for one, but I would start out just asking. Most people, if they know anything about promotion and publicity, want to write forewords because it promotes them and their work. It's just like having the testimonials. I mean, why would these people give me testimonials? Like Rick Frischman. So Rick Frischman has written a testimonial for all three of my traditionally published books. Do I really know Rick? I wrote to him the first time and I said, Rick, you've written a book with, I think it was three people I knew. Anyway, it was Michael Larson and Jill Lublin. And I think there was one other person. And I was like, you wrote books with these three people. or two people, whatever it was. And so, you know, I'd really love it if you could write a test, you know, and so-and-so, you know, Mike Larson was my mentor, and I think this book is right up your alley, and would you be willing to write a testimonial? And he said, yes. I later became one of his affiliates so that I could recommend his program to my list. I don't know that that made any difference, but anyway, I have emailed him with all three books, and I don't actually know him. And he writes a testimonial every time. So why would he do that? He does it because then his name is on my book. And everyone who reads my book goes here and says, Rick Frischman, best-selling author, publisher, and speaker. And it has his website, rickfrischman.com. So he's happy to have the promotion, you know, that kind of exposure. Brian Tracy has written a testimonial for two of my books. I don't know him. Why would he do that? I think he's a nice guy, but beyond that is because his name gets on a book. And he knows the value of that, because if my book sells well, then his name gets out there too, right? So you want to approach it that way, that, you know, I'm hoping my book will get in lots of hands and, you know, it'll be a good promotion for you. I don't know that I'd say it just like that, but, you know, that's the idea, is that this is, you know, good for both. It's a win-win.
Thank you very much for clarifying all of that.
Yeah, you're welcome. And you have to have some courage with this. So you've been through High Performance Writer. This is where courage comes in, because it's scary to approach these people, you know, that you don't know, and you feel like you're this little peon and they're these big names, and, you know, why should you do that? I'll tell you a story about Brian Tracy. So with the author training manual, I was so intent on getting Brian Tracy to do this because the book had personal growth in it, you know, personal development in the first part, and then it was all about publishing writing a marketable book and publishing it. And Brian had begun delving into books about writing books, you know, so that had become one area he was working in addition to all the personal development work he does. And so I really felt like it was a perfect fit for him. And I kept, the only connection I had to him was that I was a certified high performance coach, and he knows Brendan Burchard. Like, they've been on stage together and stuff like that. So I knew that he would know that name. And I actually said I was a certified high performance coach and that, you know, I had worked with Brendan. But anyway, I kept emailing and emailing. And they told me what to send. I sent the, you know, part of the manuscript, or maybe it was the whole manuscript. I mean, I sent them all kinds of stuff they asked for. Like, they had corresponded with me and I sent it. And it got down to the wire. And like, I had no testimonial. And they had said he was thinking about it. So I write to them and I say, this is the last day that I can get a testimonial. And they wrote back and said, Brian has been out for open heart surgery. This is his first day back in the office, but we'll see what we can do. And you want to know what? Within 24 hours, I had a testimonial. It had nothing to do with me that I hadn't gotten it yet. It was totally something out of, you know, unrelated to me or anything. I managed to get it to the publisher, and they had to change the size of some, you know, they had to squeeze it into the back cover because it was so late. But they knew the value of that as well. And so they took it and they altered it. But why the heck would he do that on the day he got back into the office after surgery? He knows that it was, you know, it's good promotion for him as well. And he, you know, I'm sure he looked at the book. I'm sure he doesn't just put his name on anything, right? But anyway, so yeah, and he actually, it's on two of my books he endorsed. Mm-hmm. So you have to have some courage and you have to have some tenacity with all of this. Okay?
Thank you, yes.
Okay. Well, looks like we lost Deborah. Sherry, any questions?
No, I'm good, thank you.
Okay, Ella, any more questions?
I know. I'm going to move on with courage.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Nothing else I can help you with, Sherry?
Nope. I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, then we'll end early today. Go ahead, Ellen.
I thought of one quick, one quick related question.
Okay.
When they say they do not accept email query by email, should I do a cover page when I send it by mail? Or should I look for specification as to how they accept it by mail, or is there a standard format by mail?
Have you seen some that say they don't accept it by email?
Yes.
Okay, those are the kind of old school agents. Most of them like it by email now. But put your query letter in an envelope and put in a self-addressed stamped envelope for return. Don't expect them to come up with an envelope and send it back to you. If you want a response, you have to have SASE, as they say, stamped self-addressed envelope.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and if you do that, they will respond. Most agencies have a timeline. They'll tell you, that they respond in a certain amount of time. Give them another 2 weeks over whatever they say. If they say 6 weeks, give them 8. And then you can actually email back, or send. I would probably send an email at that point, no matter what, and ask them if they've read it yet and do they have a response.
So I can assume at least 6 to 8 weeks for a response.
Yeah, but look on their website. Some might say it's 3 months. I had an agent respond to me 6 months later. She was somebody I knew also. I mean, like, I personally knew her well, and I sent her something, and 6 months later she sent me a note, and I told her I'm already represented by someone. So you never know. I say you never know, but look on their websites. She had something on her website that, and she didn't uphold that at all. That's why I'm saying if they go more than 2 or 3 weeks over what it says on their website, I would be contacting them. Or going on to the next one. But you should never, and here's a good point about query letters for all of you. Don't send out big batches of query letters. Because you may get somebody may be kind enough to give you some feedback that makes a difference to whether or not your book gets accepted by an agent and a publisher. And if that happens, you want to be able to change your query letter, right? Or your book proposal so that you fix the problem. So I wouldn't be sending to 25 or 30 agents all at once. A lot of people will do that. I usually suggest sending to 5 or 6. Or if you want, 3 to 4. But know that that's going to slow you way down, right? Because you only, you'll be waiting on all of them. So I usually will look at the average of when they say they'll respond. If, the average is 2 months, then, I'll send out maybe 6 queries or at most 10, and then I'll wait those 2 months. And at that point, I'll send out an email to anyone who didn't respond and say, I'm still interested in representation, but being that I haven't heard from you yet, I am going to be submitting other agents as well.
Okay. And in the meantime, I just finished the book.
Yeah, that's exactly what you do. Because finding an agent can take, if you're lucky, you find one, in the first couple months, but it could take you 6 months, 9 months to find an agent. I had a cookbook.
Whoa.
I had a cookbook that I didn't even ask to do. Okay. It was a Jewish celebrity cookbook and somebody asked me to do it. And then they reneged on the deal. And a guy I knew was feeding me agents one by one. Oh my God, it took forever. And so finally I gave up on him and I made a list and I began contacting them. And I don't know how many agents I contacted, probably 50, 60 agents and publishing houses, smaller publishing houses. And that was a whole nother, it took me a year to compile the book. And then it was another year just spent trying to find an agent.
Oh
yeah. And then I put it away. And I said, forget it. I'm not doing it. Mm-hmm. And then not that long ago, I actually pulled it out and I thought maybe I should, update this and do something with it. And my literary agent said, you're going to have to go through every one of those 90 celebrities that I had and ask all of them for new permissions. And I'd already asked a couple of people for permissions and not gotten them. So just know that can be the case. And so, there's one argument for sending out a lot of query letters right away and the other for not. So I'd probably pick your top 10 And, you know, maybe wait a month and then send another 10. But I would not do like 30 or 50 all at once.
The chances of getting published by a small publishing house are probably greater than a big one.
Yes.
Therefore, since there's an urgency in my case, it sounds like I should try for some small publishers to get it out as quickly as possible.
That's logical. You're going to move much faster than the New York publishing houses, for sure. Because with them, okay. It's going to take, with the New York publishing houses, the big ones, it's probably going to take a minimum of a year to get your book out into the marketplace once you get a deal.
Yes.
Could take longer. Small Writer's Digest, my books would, you know, I'd turn them in and it was probably less than 9 months, probably more like 6 months the books were on the shelves.
Wow.
But that was, you know, is different. And as we've talked about, there are other options. I mean, you can try Morgan James, but there you're spending all the money editing the book and you have to buy books from them and it's going to cost you well over $10,000 by the time you're done.
Nope.
Right. So, you know, I mean, there are other options besides Morgan James. I'm just saying, you know, there are options. But if you, there's nothing stopping you from approaching agents and approaching small publishing houses all on your own.
Okay.
And the university presses don't always require agents. But again, you have to go to their websites and see.
Okay.
I mean, Jane Friedman's
book.
Thank
you so much.
Yeah, Jane Friedman's book just came out from a university press, and there was a blog-to-book deal. A guy who wrote a book called Hack. He was a taxi cab driver who was also an artist, and he would draw pictures and then write blog posts about what happened to him that day in his cab, like what he heard in the back seat or what he saw, who he met. And that was published by Chicago University Press. I don't know if he had an agent or not. I'm just saying there are a lot of university presses out there, and if you check them out, maybe they also have, you know, more freedom, more flexibility. So do your research and see what publishing houses are out there that are small. Get your list of agents and just start sending. You know, and you know, if you're really in a hurry, then just stagger. You know, send, you know, and I usually, I ignore the agents who say that they don't take simultaneous queries. I ignore that because you can't sit around waiting for one agent to respond.
Okay.
Okay. So I either don't email them or I just say it's a simultaneous submission and I go on my way. And I've heard other people recommend the same because that's just asking for sitting, you know, for you to sit around forever and wait for them. Unless they can guarantee they're going to respond to you within 10 days or something, I wouldn't be waiting on them.
And is it possible to the small publishing house at a later date, given the contract, maybe it could get picked up by a larger publisher?
No, they'd have to buy it from that. Yeah. That's not going to happen very often. But look what happened to Chicken Soup for the Soul. That was a tiny publishing house that bought that.
Ah.
They had something like 125 rejections from publishers and agents. Or maybe it was just publishers. I can't remember. But when they were picked up, it was a small publishing house. Matter of fact, when they sold so many copies, the publisher said, "This is the biggest check I've ever written to anyone." So,
well, that's good news. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, you have to ask yourself, do you want to be a big fish in a small pond or a small fish in a big pond? Simon Schuster is a big pond. Of course, you're going to be looking at one division. You know, I mean, when my client who wrote Enlightened Leadership got picked up by Simon & Schuster, it was just Simon & Schuster. Was quite a number of years ago, and now they're with the Fireside division. But they've, you know, they did okay for themselves, even though they were small fish in a big pond. But not everybody does. So something to think about. I wouldn't just count on the big publishing houses. Plus, remember that the literary agents who are going to publish, who are going to pitch you to a big publishing house, are expecting you to have a big platform. If you don't have a big platform, that's, it's going to be much tougher. Doesn't mean no one will pick you up and pitch you to Simon & Schuster. It just means that it's less likely. Okay? I don't ever want to say it won't happen because I never know. Somebody could go, oh my God, this is the best book ever. We don't care that your platform is not big yet. We're going to take you on and we're going to pitch you to Simon & Schuster. You never know.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I've got lots to dream about. Okay.
Yes. All right. Sherry, does that bring up any questions for you, Sherry?
No, that was very helpful. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for asking that question, Ella.
Oh, okay.
All right. So are we good for today?
Well, I think we are. I'm ready to go achieve more inspired results.
There you go. That's right. Sherry keeps beating me to it. We had a phone conversation and she beat me to it there too. So, anyway, so have a good week. Keep working through everything. We have just two more sessions. So you know, try to at least review things so that you can come back with your questions, because I'd really like to answer all your questions for you and support you in any way that I can before we finish. Okay? Yep. All right.
Oh, yes. Sorry.
I see Sherry is tired. I'm going to go walk the dog. So I will talk to both of you, and hopefully Deborah and maybe Melinda or Deanna. I don't know what happened to Deanna.
Yeah.
Anyway, I hope some of them will be back for the next two sessions. And as Sherry said, until then, go out and achieve more inspired results with your books. Even though the books aren't out yet, do something else. Go out there and start sharing your message. Okay?
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
All right, everyone. I'll talk to you next week.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.